Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What's up, everybody? Hey, it's Drew Bledsoe, coming to you from the Behind the Mask podcast with my man, Tequila Spikes, and his co-host, Tom. We're going to tell some stories about our time together with the Bills. We're going to talk about the NFL today, and we're even going to talk a little bit of wine. So come join us on the Behind the Mask podcast.
On this episode of the Behind the Mask podcast, we sit down with Super Bowl winning quarterback Drew Bledsoe. And you would be surprised to hear, if he had to go to war with one coach, will it be Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick? Last but not least, you're going to find out exactly how he feels about Tom Brady.
That's right. But before we go Behind the Mask with Drew, make sure you subscribe to the Behind the Mask podcast. Set up the notifications so you know when we drop an episode. Of course, we drop one every week for your listening and viewing pleasure. Follow us on social media at the BTM podcast. Like, comment, share, tell a friend to tell a friend. You never know who we're going to have on as another guest on the Behind the Mask podcast. And remember, on the Behind the Mask podcast, there's only one rule. There are no rules. Now let's go.
Let's go Behind the Mask.
New FanDuel Fantasy players, your day is about to get 20% better. Start playing fantasy this football season and FanDuel will give you a 20% bonus on your first deposit, up to $500. That's a big-time bonus, and all you need to do to claim it is to make your first deposit. What are you waiting on? The reason why I love FanDuel so much, I get an opportunity to set my lineups every game day. I can also play private contests with my personal friends. And you have many different formats, main slate, single game, best ball, and also a snake draft. Experience season-long wins without the season-long waits. Sign up today at FanDuel.com/BTM to claim your bonus and start playing today. That's FanDuel.com/BTM. Age and location restrictions apply. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires after 30 days. Man, what up, my good people? Yes, we are back with another episode of the Behind the Mask podcast. I am your host, Tequila Spikes. And somewhere floating around virtually, let me bring in my partner, man. Like, two, where you at, boy?
What's going on? It's your favorite plus size model, Tutan Ray, is in the building.
Plus size model. What's up, Dow?
Listen, man, I'm excited, man. I'm excited because as an offensive lineman, we finally got a QB on the show. A prolific QB, Spikes. One of your former teammates, man.
Oh, yeah, man. Very prolific, man. So, you know what? Without further ado, let me just read off a couple of things on his resume, what this young man was able to accomplish before he stepped out of the game in the National Football League, man. 14 years in the National Football League, played with three teams, the Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, and the Dallas Cowboys. Super Bowl champion, four-time Pro Bowler, led the league in passing yards, even going back to college. He was Pac-10 Offensive Player of the Year. Man, y'all give it up for my dog, one of my all-time favorite captains, Drew Bledsoe.
You know, I appreciate it, Spikes. And I was thinking about you this morning, and you know I still have a bone to pick with you, and you know exactly where this is going, right? So after all those years of playing ball, my brother is 6 years younger than I am. He followed me everywhere. And I was always his favorite player on every team, right? You took my throne. My brother came out. He met you and watched you play. And all of a sudden, my brother came and told me, he's like, man, I got bad news for you. You're not my favorite player anymore. Keo Spikes is my favorite player. And that's so I've just, I know, man, it still hurts, man. It hurts. You know, to have my own brother tell me that I was no longer his favorite player. That really hurt my feelings, man, and I hold you responsible.
Well, you know what? It's a good thing. At least we were on the same team. It would have been worse, Drew, if I was on another team, but, dog, we had some good times. And the best times we could talk about happened on the field. Well, some of the best times happened on the field, but even better times when we were off. I think about when we used to gather together after the game and we had the RVs, we used to have the RVs boxed in, food,
You know what I mean? Having some cold drinks. We talk about drinks right now. Let me just cheers to this, man. I'm having
cheers.
A bottle of 2018 Double Back Cabernet Sauvignon, courtesy of my boy Drew Bledsoe. I appreciate this, Drew. Too bad the plus size model doesn't have any.
You know, if we had played together, Teuton, you know, you would have some, because you know I always took care of my offensive linemen, right?
Absolutely.
Always took care of my boys that took care of me. So, but we just missed each other by a year or two, I guess. So, we'll be tied after this. So, you know, I can probably find a way to get you some grape juice.
No doubt, man.
Guys, you know I am on my health kick. After I work out, the first place I stop is McDonald's. I pick up me a strawberry banana smoothie. The recipe features the perfect combination of fruit juices, such as strawberry and banana. This is the perfect pick-me-upper after I finish my workouts. And the best thing, I can order it anytime on the McDonald's app. That sounds like excellence to me. Ba-da-da-da-da.
Mobile order and pay at participating McDonald's. Download and registration required.
But yeah, Spikes, you know, it's interesting, man. When you think back about our time in Buffalo together, you know, and I know that you experienced the same thing that I did, and Teuton, you're probably in the same boat. When people hear that you're going to Buffalo, they're like, oh, man, that sucks. Man, I feel so bad for you going to Buffalo. But then you get there, and it's such an awesome place to play. And a lot of the reason that it's so great is part of what you're talking about, you know, Spikes. There's not that much going on, man. It's a small city. And so as teammates, we all hung out together. You know, if you get into the big city, you know, everybody goes their own way and there's lots going on and all of that. But we all hung out together. And it was a really cool team atmosphere when we were there, because it was, you know, there weren't a lot of other options. So we would just hang out, man. And it was great. And it was a really just a cool place to play. You know, people ask me now, you know, and I try not to say this publicly too much because I don't want to piss anybody off in New England. But, you know, like if the places you played, what was your favorite? I was like, man, playing in Buffalo was like playing pro ball in a college town. You know, you just felt like you were part of the community.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it was a really special place to play. And that's no, you know, that's no slight on New England or Dallas. You know, I mean, it was a great time there, but it was just different in Buffalo, man. It felt like you were playing for a college team, but you were in the pros, man. It was really fun.
Oh, nah, dog. It was 1,000% fun. And I get people who ask me that question all the time. And it's more so they come at me and they try to pin me down saying, it's either this or that. And so I have to back off the mic, but I'm going to put that on you now. So we don't play a little game of this or that. All right. So we talk about playing on the football field. I want to know who was the best receiver that you played with. Keyshawn Johnson or Eric Moles?
Well, they were different dudes. You know, the thing about Keyshawn that the general public doesn't really understand is what a great teammate Keyshawn was. I mean, there's all the noise and the book, you know, just give me the damn ball. And there's a public perception that he was a selfish guy, that he was a diva receiver, but that was not who he was as a teammate. He was a guy that would do the hard stuff. He would block. He would go across the middle. He would do all of those things. He didn't have near the explosiveness of Eric Moles. I remember Eric, man, the first time I bumped into him, I got to Buffalo because obviously I'd seen him on the field, and I saw him walking down the hall toward me, and I thought he was a linebacker. And that dude was put together and was explosive and could go get it. So you're not going to pin me down. I'm not going to pick a favorite. It'd be like trying to ask me publicly which one is my favorite kid, man. I'm not going to tell you that it's my daughter. I will tell you that you know, that both of those guys, I got to play with Moles for 3 years. I got to play with Key for two. Those are guys like yourself that I wish I could have played with my entire career. And we would have had a ton of fun.
Man, Moles was so tough. we had the same agent coming out. So my rookie year, I met him at the gym. We were working out and we started playing basketball after the workout. And this man was just dunking left and right. And I'm like, bro, you a receiver. You supposed to have a 40 something inch vertical. I can't jump. I'm an offensive lineman. I was 28 on a good day. And he was just dunking, talking trash. I'm like, it don't even count if you dunk on me. I can't jump with you. No possible way. But to your point, he was a phenomenal athlete, man.
He was, man. I remember, I think it was a preseason game. And I threw Molds a hitch, you know, just threw it to him at 5 yards. He stiff-armed a dude and took it the distance for a touchdown. Like, man, this is easy, man. I throw the ball to this guy. He's just going to go run people over and score. Love both of those dudes, man. Still love them both to this day.
Definitely. So we still going to keep you on the spot with this or that. So you played for two of the most dominant professional coaches in the NFL during your time. So this or that, out of the two Bills, Bill Belichick or Bill Parcells?
Well, I think it's hard to argue against Belichick now, man, with the unprecedented run of success that he put together. Now, I think Tommy helped a little bit with that. But this season, I think, is going to be a very definitive one for Belichick if he can get them with the Patriots back on top. They took one on the chin in week one against the Dolphins, which I don't think anybody expected. But if he can get them back on top this year, I think that would cement his legacy. But of those two, I'd probably go Belichick. Parcells, Hall of Fame football coach. So you're talking about two of the greatest ever. But after playing for both, and I didn't love either one of them. Right? It wasn't like it was super enjoyable going to work every day. For either one of those guys, right? But the results speak for themselves, man. They're both amazing football coaches, but I think whenever Belichick decides to hang it up, he's probably going to go down as possibly the greatest of all time. It was a real privilege. And then the other guy I played for in between those two was Pete Carroll. And Pete's going to be in the Hall of Fame as well, had a national championship as a college coach and a Super Bowl as a professional coach. Should have had two if he made one play call different. But I played for three guys in New England that are all going to be in the Professional Football Hall of Fame. Very different personalities. But the crazy thing with those three is that the things that made them successful are actually very, very similar, and we know what those things are. It's discipline, it's getting your job done, it's competing every day, all of that stuff. They just approached it with a very different personality.
I appreciate that, because a lot of people talk about Bill and Bill, and a lot of guys, as you know, players can't handle them. So what is that common thing? People say the Patriot way and they get by, rub by it. But what is that thing that makes it so hard for a lot of athletes or a lot of players to come inside of that locker room? And it's either you get on the ship or you get gone. So what's the one thing in common that both coaches have that makes it so hard to be able to adjust?
Well, I think there are a few things, actually. But at the very top of that list is it's always team above self, right? It's what's good for the team. And ultimately, what's good for the team is good for the player as well, right? If you win, it's good for everybody, right? And I think sometimes that's hard for certain players who have been the star wherever they've been, from high school to college and then to other places in the pros, maybe. If you've been the star and all of a sudden you have to put yourself beneath the team, that can be hard. It also requires, playing for the Patriots, you've got to be smart. They ask a lot in terms of what they want their players to learn, and not only on an annual basis, but on a week-to-week basis to study and to digest as much information as they put in front of you to try to give you an advantage. And so you got to be smart to play in that system. And some guys, it can be overwhelming. When they come in and they're used to just being, the best athlete, so they can just go throw it out there with the Patriots fan. You got to have it up here as well as physically.
Right now, there are some African Americans with sickle cell disease who need a blood transfusion every single month just to stay alive. And they are more likely to get a compatible match from a donor of the same ethnicity. So please donate, because our blood saves lives. Go to redcrossblood.org/ourblood. Find out where and what time in your neighborhood now.
Like, I was about to ask you another question, but I just had a sip of this double back, though. Let me be honest with you. Check this out. So I remember when you told me, you was like, look, I got something brewing. And then when I had some sent to the house and I tried it, and I didn't know it was going to. And I'm, listen, for everybody out there, I'm not blowing this wine up. Like, I tell the truth and people know that. When I tasted it, I was like, damn. So I waited a year later and opened up another bottle, same vintage year, and it tastes even better. So my thing is, bro, like, I never knew all of this was going on inside of your head when we were playing together in Buffalo. So, like, what made you start Double Bag Winery?
You know, it was a combination of things, Spikes, that pulled it together for me. But probably at the top of that list, there were a lot of guys that got into wine around the same time. There were a lot of guys that drank wine both in New England and in Buffalo, and some guys in Dallas. But I would have guys come over to the house and they're like, all right, just bring a bottle of wine. I did this a couple times in New England. And they would bring over something. They would always try to impress me. They'd bring some Big Daddy from Napa or something from Bordeaux or whatever. I would grab something from my little hometown, from Walla Walla, Washington, you know, the town with the funny name out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. I would grab something from my hometown, and we would put all these wines in paper bags and we would taste through them to figure out which one we liked the best. And that was simple. And at the end of it, every time we did that, my hometown would win. I'm like, oh man, okay, you know, there's something going on back in this little town. And that's really where the seed was planted, you know, literally and figuratively, that was something I could do after the fact. But then from there to get to where we are, man, we've got an amazing team, and we control everything from the dirt all the way through the glass. We've got a farming team. We got a farming team now, 13 individuals that work for us. They work for us year round. We pay them better than anybody else in the Northwest. They've got retirement benefits. They've got health benefits. And what that has turned into for us is that they care more about our vineyards than anybody else does in the Valley. Because a lot of other teams, they'll use seasonal labor, or they'll use a contracted company. But these people treat our vines like they own them. And so then you get that attention to detail, and that just helps you get that little extra edge on top to build some elegance and some balance into the wine. Plus, it feels good at the end of the day. You know, you wake up and you brush your teeth, and, you know, the guy looking back at you in the mirror, you know that you're taking good care of your people. And when you take good care of your people, it turns out they take good care of you. And so it's something I'm really proud of. And at the end of the day, you know, you get to sit down and enjoy it and share it with friends. And some of my favorite compliments, though, are basically what you just said from old teammates, right? You know, so they'll get some wine, yeah. They're like, and they'll send me a side text or give me a call like, damn, man, the wine's actually good. I'm like, well, that's such a backhanded compliment, man. You thought I was getting in this to fail and make shitty wine, right? Right. You know, no, man, we're really proud of it. We've got a great squad, and, you know, and I still think our best wines are ahead of us, man. We've got more vineyards being planted. We're continuing to experiment at the winery, and I think our best wines are still out in front of us, which is really, really cool.
Well, take us back a little bit, man. We're going to go back to 2001, the hit that put you on the sideline for a little bit. You know, we got to talk about it. Go behind the mask.
Yeah.
Did you think that was going to be a career-changing injury for you?
No, I really did not. You know, well, first of all, I didn't know the severity of it until I woke up in the hospital with a tube in my chest. You know, I didn't recognize that it was actually a dangerous thing, you know, until that night. And then they told me that I was, you know, in the hospital for, you know, what, I don't know, 5 or 6 days, and then couldn't do anything for a long time. So, you know, initially I was like, oh man, this is kind of a real deal. Maybe hopefully I can get healthy and get back on the field. You know, and Tommy had been there. He was on practice squad the year before. And going into that week, you know, I think there was some discussion as to whether Damon Heward or Brady were going to be the backup for that game, right? You know, and it's sort of the stuff of legend now, but I don't think anybody except Tom really saw that he was ever going to be an NFL starter, let alone become one of the greatest of all time. You know, the kid got out there, the team rallied around and played great early, you know, that season. And next thing you know, man, it's this Cinderella ride, you know, all the way to the Super Bowl and to a world championship, which was, for me, it was the very definition of bittersweet, right?
I know, right?
It's my team and my teammates, you know, celebrating a world championship, but the other dude is out there, you know, playing my position, you know. And so it was, I was at the same, you know, it was now Tommy was at least nice enough to sprain his ankle in the AFC championship game, so he let me play for a little bit.
But and then, you came in and did work though. You got the team to the Super Bowl. We came in
and we got there, so at least I got to play for a minute. But you know, I tell people, you know, when you do that and you know you've been the guy, you know, since, you know, sophomore year of high school, you've been the guy, right? And all of a sudden, you know, you got to stand there and watch. Man, it was hard. It was hard. I'm not gonna lie, it was hard. But the thing that made it easier though is I always liked and respected Tommy so much that you know, if he'd been an asshole, you know, it would have been a way different scenario. But I always liked and respected the kid so much. But shoot, you know, who would have possibly predicted that this skinny little twerp, you know, from Michigan was going to go on to be Tom Brady, right? You know, but I'm proud of him. You know, there's, I mean, obviously when you lose your job to somebody, there's bitterness, there's resentment, there's all of those things, but ultimately he's gone on and proved it. And, you know, and he's proven it again down in Tampa, man. The kid just seems like he's going to play forever. By the way, when I do bump into him, I always make sure I call him kid, because I'm the only one old enough in the locker room to call him kid anymore. he's older than all the coaches, you know,
right,
man. But no, it was hard times. Certainly didn't see what was coming, but you know, life is life, you know, and it's all how you react to things. If that hadn't happened, I would have never played in Buffalo. You know, I would never have gotten to be friends with Spikes. You know, I would never play in Dallas, you know? And so you look back at it and you know, those things that you can't change, but what you always have control of is how you handle yourself. You try to make the best of whatever situation it is. And, you know, and now looking back, I wouldn't change any of it. You know, I wouldn't change any of it. You know, obviously, you know, would love to be sitting here with, you know, a whole bunch of like 6 championship rings and all of that stuff. But you can't.
Well, hell, you got one.
Got one. I mean, you know, if I hadn't got hurt though, I mean, let's be honest, we all know this, Spikes. If I hadn't got hurt, they probably have like 9 championships in New England. I mean, you know.
Nah, you was tearing it up though back then, because I actually got drafted with Tom Brady. I went before Tom Brady in 2008. And
yeah, that's point, his claim to fame.
That's my claim
he
to fame,
got drafted,
man,
before Tom
and
Brady.
I remember seeing him at the combine. And all that. He was like, I played with him in the All-Star game too. I think it was the East-West game. And I was like, man, this kid from Michigan, he just don't know how to get rid of the ball. But, you know, but what do I know, right? He's still doing his thing, man.
Yeah, what do you
He's know? Still doing his thing. He's still doing his thing. And I'm proud of him because he's done it all with a lot of class, you know, which so that makes me proud of him. And I tell him that all the time. I'm more proud of how he's done it than what he's done. And at some point, though, I mean, let's be honest, at some point he needs to find another hobby. I mean, man, you can't play. I mean, you can't play football until you. Yeah, I mean, you got to do something else someday, Tommy. Shoot. Come on, man.
I know it, bro. We have guys who are looking for things they need to get into, looking to make the transition. I'm worried about Tom Brady because when he get out of competition, it's like, bro, you can't compete and win a championship unless you're going to go in the front office. Maybe unless you own the team. So who knows? That may happen one day.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. It'll be interesting to see where what he ends up doing if he ever decides to stop playing, man. He may play till he's 60. Shoot, who knows, man. yeah, it'll be interesting to see when it's been that much of your life for that long. You know, that transition can sometimes be even harder, I think. You know, it's not easy for any of us, you know, when it's time to step off the field and move on with the rest of your life. But when you've gone that long, it can be even more difficult. So it'll be interesting to see what he ultimately decides to do and when he decides to pull that trigger.
And when you were playing, I know you mentioned it was difficult dealing with being the starter, being the man from high school all the way to the NFL. And that animosity does kick in, because I know back when we were playing, Spice and I were talking about it earlier, typically you don't lose your job to injury, right? So did you have any animosity to Coach Belichick or even Tom when you were going through that process?
Not Tom, but hell yes, with Belichick. I was like, man, look, you know, I almost died out here on the field for you. And you know, things are starting to look up and then things are looking pretty good. And I just remember, yeah, I was not happy. You know, I had all kinds of thoughts, you know, and I thankfully I've got, you know, a great wife and a great support system around me. And you know, I spent the day after I found out that I wasn't actually gonna be the guy when I was healthy. You know, there are times like, man, screw these people. I'm done. I'm out of here. They don't get to push me around like this. But by the end of that evening, I was good. And I was like, all right, you're going to do the right thing. You're going to go back. You're going to be a good teammate. You're going to support Tom. You're going to do everything you can to try and, you know, help this situation. You know, and that part of it worked out. You know, had I tried to bring the whole thing down, that becomes all about me, and that's not what it's about. It's not about you, it's about the team, and it's about trying to do the right thing in every situation. But I'm not gonna lie to you, there were some thoughts about you know, hey man, these people don't get to kick me around like this, man, after I almost died on the field for y'all. And so there was some animosity there, but I'm good with it now. You know, time heals things, and I've bumped into Belichick a number of times now, and we're good. And he's an interesting dude, though. You get him away from a football environment, and it's like he's a different person. He showed up at a wine deal. I went back there and did a wine.
Meaning that you would like him? Different person?
Yeah. Oh, dude. So I went back there and did this wine deal, like right after we had launched Double Back. And he showed up with Bears, with his assistant. They came over for this wine deal, and he was talking and laughing and sipping on some wine. And I'm like, wait a second. Who's this imposter? Because I know that's not Bill Belichick. He's like, I just saw him smile. I've never seen him smile before, unless he, you know, won a world championship, and then he like right back to business after that. But when you get him off the field, he actually lightens up, and he's pretty funny and engaging dude. But when he goes to work, it's all work. I remember Tommy telling me a number of years ago, I think he was like 17 years in at this point, and I asked him, I said, hey, is Belichick, is he lightened up at all? And he looked at me, he goes, dude, there are times when he'll walk by me in the hallway and won't say hi. Like, they've been together 17 years.
Damn.
17 years, the most successful coach quarterback duo of all time. And he would walk by and just ghost him in the hallway, which was, you know, it's just all business. When it's time to go to work, he just goes to work, and there's no emotion. There's no anything involved in it. He just sort of becomes an analytical robot when he goes to work, which is, it's allowed him to be remarkably successful. But it just, I don't know anybody else quite like that.
Bro, the one thing that I appreciate about you, Drew, is, you know, a lot of guys, they'll get out of the game, and most guys leave the game. It's not at their will. You know, they're forced out of the game, whether you like it or not. The thing that I really appreciate about you is you still stay involved in the game. It's some guys who I call and they'll be like, man, I ain't watching that shit. And I'm like, bro, like, this is like, you wouldn't be living good right now if it wasn't for the game. So, like, you still got to give some homage and pay homage to the guys who are still playing. The thing that we've had several conversations, and we talk about the game and ball, and we get together on Zoom calls and we talk about wine that ends up turning into ball conversation. I read somewhere you talked about Cam Newton, and this was during training camp early. And you said you felt like Cam had the opportunity to really rebound in 2021 with the full training camp and having the opportunity to learn everything from the beginning. Obviously, we know where he's at now. Looking for a job and, you know, still looking for the right fit. What are your thoughts now for Cam Newton? I know he came out and said, yeah, I'm willing to come back and play. I'm not opposed to being a backup. But do you think that he will come back and play? What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I anticipate that he will come back and play. I really hope that he does. I think he's got a lot more to give to the game. And, you know, and one of the things that I think is part of what you're talking about, the game doesn't owe him anything. The game doesn't owe us anything. But the thing that I appreciate about Cam and the way that he handled that whole situation was that he did not do anything that would scare a team away. He did not, you know, he did not come out and go negative. He was completely, you know, supportive through the whole thing. And I don't know Cam. I just know him by reputation, and I know him from what I heard about him in the inside the organization, about what a great teammate he was. I mean, shoot, man, he was a team captain after he'd only been there for a few minutes. You know, and so I think he showed that he is a true teammate, and if given the opportunity, he'd welcome it. The thing I hope for him is that, and I'm not hoping for anybody to get hurt. We know that. But if somebody does get hurt on a contending team, I would love to see him have an opportunity to go in there and play for a team that gives them the chance to fight for a championship. I did think they were going to give him a year this year with a full complement of weapons. You know, part of the reason, you know, I mean, look, you were talking about Tommy earlier. Tommy's not stupid. Part of the reason that he chose to go ahead and move on down south, like all the old people from Massachusetts do,
in Buffalo,
and New York. Buffalo, right? And New York, right? Somebody told me that a long time ago. Like, yeah, of course, Tom went to Florida. That's what all old people from Massachusetts do. But the other reason that he allowed himself to move on was because he saw that the cupboard was going to be a little bit bare, that the same complement of weapons weren't going to be there. And that's what Cam was saddled with last year. They didn't have, you know, and Edelman gets hurt, and then, you know, Gronk's gone, and they just didn't have a lot of dudes. And so I was kind of hopeful that he was going to come back this year and get to play with some weapons around him and in a situation that was going to allow him to succeed. I was very surprised that they went ahead and pulled the trigger as soon as they did. And, you know, and we'll see how it goes from there. But I'm cheering for the guy. I know he's going to be fine in life. He seems like he's got himself pretty squared away on a personal level, again, without knowing him at all. You know, and he's got a big personality. I mean, if he wants to go do TV, he's going to do great at that. You know, we all know that. But I would love to see him have another chance to play, because he's a remarkable talent and seems like a heck of a dude.
Overcoming the odds, rewriting the playbook, delivering under pressure. The MVPs of small business lead their teams to victory all year long. Visa is proud to provide playmakers everywhere with more tools to help grow their business and help them achieve even greater success. Because the more people we can empower, the more we all win. Visa, a network working for everyone.
Let me ask you this, though, from a challenge standpoint, because from a fan perspective, you would think, fans think, oh, it's that easy for a quarterback, Cam, former MVP of the league, to come in week 3, 4, 5, whenever it is, and they expect to see him back to their MVP form. Bro, you know, because you put in the work, you were one of the greatest to ever do it. I remember getting on the team with you, and I remember praying like, God, thank you. I'm finally on a team to where I got a chance with the quarterback, with your leadership. Talk about, like, how hard is it just to get acclimated with just understanding the playbook? And we're talking about Cam, but, like, how hard is it for him to be able to go in and understand the playbook and then lead the whole entire team with confidence, knowing that you didn't have all of that preparation from mini camp, training camp?
It's really hard. I mean, you know, when you have that, all of that time to learn it, because first you have to learn a new language, then you have to learn a whole bunch of new teammates, then you got to develop a rapport with your offensive coordinator and learn what he likes, and he learns what you like. You know, and that's why you see, you know, in most cases, you see, you know, quarterbacks and coordinators, when they're together for multiple years, that's when you see great success. And, you know, you even saw it in a very short span of time. You saw it with the Buccaneers last year, where they weren't all clicking on all cylinders early in the season offensively. It really took until about mid-season before they started to click. And that's with Bruce Arians and with Tommy, you know, they're, you know, who are two of the greatest of all time at their respective jobs. So it does. It takes a lot of time. And when, you know, and then you throw in, you know, injuries, and you throw in all the COVID craziness last year and all of that. I mean, it really was not an honest test for Cam in that situation, you know, to come in and show what he could do. So, you know, I'm hoping that he does, you know, land someplace and get a chance to do it. But if he does, it sure would be nice to see him get to be there for a month before he has to go out there and actually lead. So, but it is, man, it's a big challenge, and it's so multifaceted as a quarterback. when you're playing linebacker, all you do is just run fast and hit people, man. And so maybe you don't even have to think, right?
See, that's a nice way of saying it. You can't play for the Patriots because it requires thinking.
Nah, Spice. You know, y'all just see ball, get ball. They don't take
see a ball, get ball. Yeah, man. They're just trained pit bulls out there. Yeah, they see that ball. It's like a big juicy steak, and they go for it as fast as they can.
Yes, that is. That's the end reward.
That's why his neck's so big. That's why his neck's so big.
Well, listen, I can't win because it's 2-1 right now. I hate y'all right now.
No, you don't want you do not want to get into an argument with offensive players, Spikes. You know that. That's been the case forever and ever. Dude. With the quarterback thing, though, it is you have to handle the offense. You have to get to know your individual receivers and understand their body language. You got to understand protections. And then you got to understand all the personalities that you're dealing with and how to lead that team. And so it's a lot.
The selfish receivers.
Yeah, it depends on which ones you're talking
every
about.
Every receiver is selfish.
They're divas. We know that, and the honest ones will tell you that. There are a few that are somewhat selfless, but even then, if they don't get the ball for a while, they turn into little crybabies. So you know, you gotta go give them a hug and tell them you still love them, even though you didn't throw them 8 balls that game. But yeah, you got to get to know each of them. You know, we talked about Moulds earlier, and I love Eric Moulds, but man, he needed some attention sometimes. You know,
I would go
take care of him. You know, and I had to talk to him on the sidelines from time to time. You know, I remember the first regular season game we ever played. They were rolling coverage to him, so he was double covered, and so I was working with Peerless, and we had other weapons, and Josh Reed and Reimers Mom, and we had some dudes. And so I went to him and said, hey, man, I'm going to need you. They're rolling to you, but I'm going to need you. And he's like, whatever, man. I'm like, no, I'm going to need you, Moles. Let's go, right? And sure enough, late in the game, he caught the touchdown that tied the ball game up, you know, late in the game, and came over and gave me a hug, and we were all good again. But some of those guys, you have to understand how they're wired. You know, some guys don't need to hear a word, but some guys you got to know when to go give them a little hug.
Have you ever played with a receiver that wasn't open, that felt that he wasn't open?
Oh, you know what? Ben Coates, who was my tight end in New England.
It
was
Ben
Winter Coates. Man, yeah, that was a man there now. Ben was great because he was not selfish. But what he would do, he would come to me, you know, third quarter of things hadn't been going well. Somebody come over to me, all right, man, look. You tried the other guys. I appreciate it. It's not working. Come back to your boy and let's go. And I'm like, that's not selfish. That's just honest, right? You know, So I would come back and start throwing the ball at Ben and things would start clicking again, you know? So he was not selfish. He was honest and he was right. So like, all right, look, I remember Parcells told me one time we had one play that we would run in the red zone all the time. It was called 84 Red. And he goes, I don't even know why we call this play. All you're going to do is throw it to Coates. I was like, yeah, well, he always catches it. And we always score. So, you can call me stupid if you want, but
what are we talking about?
Yeah. If it always works, then I'm going to do that. Everybody in the stadium knows he's going to catch it and he still catches it and scores. Game's not that hard that way, you know?
Exactly.
No doubt. Student of the game, prolific when you play, cannon of an arm, over 44,000 yards passing. What quarterbacks in this generation remind you of a Drew Bledsoe?
Oh man, that's very kind of you. I think the guy that most emulates my game is Lamar Jackson. True dual threat.
Come on.
Hey, what Madden league you playing in? Oh, I want to jump
on. It's like, I'm talking true dual threat. 4.3 speed. You know, when I see Lamar Jackson play, I was like, that looks just like me back when I played. Honest answer, Justin Herbert right now. I'm a big fan of this kid. Man, he throws it nice. Now he is more athletic than I was, but then runs around a little bit. But I really like the way that he throws it. But I think just stature wise, the way the ball comes off his hand looks familiar to me. You know, same thing with Josh Allen. Again, a guy that actually can pull it down and work with his legs a little more than I did. But watching him throw, it's similar. And then you got this other kid that's different from anybody, and that's Mahomes. The throws that this kid makes, it's just different, where he's way off balance and then still throws with amazing velocity and accuracy from all kinds of different platforms. You know, he's pretty remarkable watching him play. But it is interesting, man. You know, they've been calling for the death of the pocket quarterback for a long, long time and forever. They would say that every year. It might be happening now because these guys that can move can also work from the pocket. You know, I remember Steve Young was the first one that said that he didn't learn to become a great quarterback until he learned to work from the pocket first and throw it first and then use his legs. And now you're watching these kids that come in that truly are dual threats. It used to be, to me, when they would say dual threat, it was like, oh, that means he can't throw. But now you're seeing these kids come in that can actually throw with accuracy, and then when they pull it down and run, can really do it and can make things happen, you know, with their legs as well. And so, you know, I do think that that's the future of the game now. I think they predicted it about 25 years too soon, but I think that that's where it's headed now.
Yo, and that's a good point that you brought up, because you see a lot of guys who are truly, like, dual threats, even Josh Allen, when you look at what he's doing up in Buffalo. I want to ask you, do you think a lot of this is due to the fact of it's a passing league? And I think now you see more young kids who are emulating what they see. And when you look at middle school, what are they having before they have anything? 7-on-7. When you look at high school, what's one of the things that they're having competing in before they even put on the pads, even in the summertime, 7-on-7. Do you attribute a lot of this success probably from a lot of these young players, especially at the quarterback position, understanding, knowing how to throw the ball, but then also blessed enough to be able to be considered a dual threat?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that, because we know, you know, anything that you're going to try to do athletically, it's about reps. You know, you got to see the picture a lot, and they're getting a lot more reps in these 7-on-7 leagues. And then the other piece of it that's allowing this to happen a little bit more, Spikes, and I know that this is something that when you look at the game probably drives you crazy, you can't hit them anymore. You know, I mean, that was one of the reasons as a quarterback that you didn't run around. I know it does. And then, you know, it's like, if you're a quarterback, you're going to go run around. Well, you're running the risk that you might have your head separated from your body by the tequila spikes of the world if you're going to go do that. And now, and it's for the good of the game, right? And I know it pisses you off, and I get that. It's to keep the marquee players on the field. But shoot, man, if you went and ran around, you know, like some of these kids do now, and man, you know, you're going to get hit really, really hard, and your career is going to be a lot shorter if you play in that day and age than it is right now.
Well, man, like we said, one of the more prolific quarterbacks, particularly of our generation, again, over 44,000 passing yards in your career. Your numbers stack up with some of the greats that are out there. Do you think that Drew Bledsoe gets the love he deserves being a top 20 all-time pass in the NFL?
And don't be fucking modest either, Drew. Don't you give me that crap today.
We're going behind the mask.
No, look. So, here's the honest answer to that is that, you know, I know who I was as a quarterback, and I know where I stack up with, you know, the Dan Marinos and the John Elways and the Jim Kellys of the world. You know, that's when I was playing. That was the category that I was in. And so I'm comfortable with that. In terms of the outside perception, that's outside of my control. But I know where I stack up, you know. And look, if I go, you know, go to an event with you know, Kelly, Marino, Aikman, Young, you know, those guys, I am one of their peers, and they recognize me as such. Takeo, I mean, shoot, you know, you're in the same boat, right? You know, where you just weren't in the right place at the right time. But if you go hang out with a bunch of linebackers, they know Takeo Spikes, and they know what you were all about, and they know where you fit in that grand paradigm of the linebackers of all time.
Yes,
indeed. The public may not know as well, but the linebackers know. And at the end of the day, you know, what's more important, the respect of some media dude that never put on a jock strap in his life, or is it the respect of the guys that you played with, played against, and that were your peers when you were playing? And so that's where it is, you know, to go and try and campaign for public affection. Yeah, come on, man. I don't have time for that shit. You know, and then you look at, I mean, you know, you want to talk about some other guys that we played with. Shoot, man, London Fletcher. You go put his stats up. You go put his stats up against Ray Lewis. You know, and they're right down the line,
neck and neck.
Yeah. Dude was a 5'9" linebacker in the NFL that never missed a game. I mean, come on, right? And then you go look at how about Larry Centers? Of all the dudes out there that should be in the Hall of Fame, he's the all time leading receiver in the history of the NFL as a running back, all time, like number one.
And
all
a lot
time.
Of people. And as considered a fullback too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's sort of one of those spikes that we played. We were so blessed to play the game and got to do it for a long time. And man, to harbor any bitterness because you know, some media types don't give you the props you reserve, that's just a waste of time. And I don't spend any time thinking about it. But I do know where I stand. I stack up with the guys that played in my day and age and they know it, and my teammates know it, and my opponents knew it. So, you know, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about whether or not the media dudes buy into that shit. So that's where that stands.
Bruh, sure. That's exactly what we wanted to hear, because I don't buy into it either. Mm-hmm. I believe I was the greatest of all time when I stepped on the football field. That's the chip that I carried with me. And, bruh, I will say this. I can't sing you praises enough. Not because you came on the Behind the Mask podcast. That's another level. But I'm just saying, from a leadership standpoint, accepting me walking into a locker room, making me feel like, you know what? You're probably the final piece, what we need in order to make this happen together collectively. I appreciate that, your leadership and just leading other men, alpha males. Bro, a lot of respect to you, man, and I appreciate you, Drew.
Appreciate you, Spikes. And by the way, man, if you ever need to know where you stack up in the world, you're Adam Bledsoe's favorite player of all time. And so, I mean, dude.
Shout out to AD.
Yeah, look, you know, they can have their gold jackets and all that, but you're in the Adam Bledsoe Hall of Fame, dude. And there's only one member of that, dude, of that Hall of Fame.
That's right, because he kicked his brother out and accepted.
He kicked my brother out. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, you know
can we tell one story before we get off? Because this was the best thing. I think my favorite thing that you and I ever pulled off while we were there was that we got Larry Centers in like his 13th or 14th year in the league to fall for the turkey prank on Thanksgiving. He was 13 years in, and we sent him to the store. He's like, oh, man, I can't believe you guys got me. This has been going on. Like, Larry, man, this has happened every year you've been in the league. Every single year. He goes, yeah, but you guys sold it so well. Like, well, hey, Spikes, Knuckles, man, we're good actors. That was one of my badges of honor that we got Larry to fall for that shit.
Cheers, man. That was good, bro. I wish we could show the tape, too, even the next year of that tape, but we're going to keep that up under wraps, though. All for likewise. Entertainment.
I love it.
Hey, man, I appreciate you, Drew.
Cheers, man.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.